Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. Now let's get into today's episode.
I am Tyrone Ross, host of the Human Advisor Podcast. Before we get started, I need you all to run to YouTube, smash that subscribe button, where you'll be able to see the full-length conversation with myself and Emlyn Miles Mattingly, the CEO and founder of GenNext Wealth. This podcast, that conversation, is all about humanizing the experience that advisors have in their practice and bringing that to you. When you'll see the conversation that Emlyn and I had, it's really about family. It's really about his clients, and he references his clients all being friends, all being family. That's what this is all about. You'll also see us walking and talking about a special and pivotal moment in my life as well as his, the year 2012. Really pay attention for how that seminal moment in his life impacted his practice. Here are some highlights of that conversation. Enjoy.
It was a roller coaster ride in 2012. Sister pastor, going through a divorce, then I get a DUI, and then I get into the industry. It was tough, man. It was a tough time, but we made it through and learned some life lessons. Prior to all that stuff happening, I was very judgmental of people.
Right.
It was easy for me to call someone out on something, you know, about what they did wrong. Oh, you did that wrong. Oh, you did that wrong. You did that wrong. After all this stuff happened to me, I didn't have a good leg to stand on.
Right.
And it was a really humbling experience.
Right.
When I first started as a manager in the bank, I started my career, I was staying in that hotel right there.
Really?
And I stayed in San Francisco for 6 months while I was doing my training. And here we are, you know, let's say 12 years later, filming this across the street.
That's crazy.
From where things started. So
wow,
that's kind of,
you know. That's powerful. Clearly we are in the social media age, branding, right? Oh, we were just talking about King content.
Yeah.
Mr. Castelli, how do you, you know, you market, leverage your social media? Is it more traditional media? Like, how do you go about creating a name for GenNext?
Mostly social media, primarily showing me, like,
right.
Just being
the podcast.
Yeah,
right?
the podcast, definitely the podcast. But that just started, you know, that's only been 2 months going. So I know it seems like it's been long, but it's only been 2 months.
Wow.
So, you know, primarily it's been just telling my story at all times on all social medias. I had someone come up to me the other day, a client, and she was like, before she came in, she looked me up on social media. And she said, it was between you and another advisor. And when I looked at your social media, she said, I seen pictures of you. I seen pictures of your family. I could see your business.
Wow.
She said, before I came in, I felt like I knew you. And so I decided to go with you over him because all he did is talk about money. And I didn't even hear you talk about that.
Wow. See, that's why that branding is important. And that, and it's funny, people pick and choose, you know, the platforms that they use. But, and people, I was like, oh, well, what about, I was like, my clients follow me on every platform. Like they, you know, you get clients from Twitter. Yeah. But, and then they're on there. So that's a really interesting thing. Let me ask you this though: do you plan to do, you know, the speaking circuit has become a thing with financial advisors? I know, again, I've done a lot of it, obviously, with a specialization with crypto. Do you plan to do that more?
I would love to.
Or do you feel like that takes you away from the practice too much?
Not necessarily, because I think it's a part of the practice, right? If I'm really trying to get out there and talk to minorities, as we get more minority advisors in there, and advisors that aren't minorities that are dealing with minorities, I think that's a place where I can talk. One, because I am one, and those are where my clients are at. You know, just talking about personal development, growth, just different things that I think people need to hear.
I rant about it all the time, how I feel like our business is ripe for disruption. We are right in the bullseye. It's social media, it's voice, it's blockchain, it's all of these different things. Again, one of the things that are consistent in the advisors that are going to be around are the ones who have relationships with their clients, who build that connection. I also believe those tools are going to allow us to build a bigger connection, right? If we leverage them properly. So it's good to know that we're forward thinking. And again, reaching the people that we want to reach and who we speak for, I think it's, you know, on the second point of that they do see you in front of a crowd, right? And as I said, it is also important that they see the audience looks like us as well. And that's the one thing that it continues to bug me when I look out to these audiences. I'm like, well, I'm up here they check the box.
Yeah.
You know, we got to start bringing more of us into these rooms when we do get those opportunities.
It's crazy because I was, when I go to, we talked about this in the room that day, in the hotel room, but when we go into a place, like I'll go to the high school. You know, today we're just casual and we talked about this. But if I go to the high school, like I'm wearing a suit. Why? Because I'm probably the only black man that they're going to see in a suit.
Yes.
So they need to see me like that. And so I think when it comes to the kids or young adults, there was someone that told me this back to the church thing. I had a pastor tell me one time I was at their church in Sacramento, and I went up there and he had me say a few words, and he pulled me to the side afterwards and he said, Emlyn, he said, you know what? Do you see the way my young black men look at you?
No, I don't see anything.
He said, the way they look at you, they'll never look at me like that. Right. And this is why we need more of you.
Yep.
Because you can reach them like I can't reach them. They look at me and say, okay, well, this, that, and other thing. And this is all at the age of, you know, I was like 25, 26. I really didn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah.
Now I get it.
Right. And especially being a father.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like you're looking, you know, you're speaking to a generation of youth, right? You want your kids to have those examples. And I look at it all the time. It's like, I ask these, you know, young black boys all the time, like, do you know what I do?
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea. They don't know what a financial advisor is. They don't know what any of that is. So it's powerful that we continue to create that imagery. And as a black man, you are challenged with that. Like when I go on Bloomberg, my client's like, oh, just wear jeans and a t-shirt. I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have that luxury.
No.
You know, so.
That's Elgin Miles right there, my grandfather. He said, if you look like someone, you act like someone, people will treat you like someone.
100%.
So 100%. I just try that.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Human Advisor Podcast. I am your host, Tyrone Ross, special guest in the building, Emlyn Miles Mattingly. Brother, how are you?
Doing great.
Of Gen Next Wealth is here to spend some time with us. We're going to kick it a little bit. I just finished your podcast not too long ago, so you returned it a favor. I appreciate that. I mean, so many ways we could take it, you know, from our initial conversation when we met. Let's just, you know, just start right with it. Tell us a little bit about you, about your practice.
Where I, like, the practice started, I have a niche. I work with minority families.
Okay.
The way it all started was, it was accident. You know, I didn't pick the niche. The niche chose me.
Right, right.
So
when you find a niche, it becomes a niche.
Yeah, right. So now I'm in my niche. But what happened was, you know, started in banking, worked as a teller, worked there for 4 years as a teller as I was going to school. And then from being a teller, I got into new accounts. And then I eventually became the branch manager. We always had financial advisors in the office. And they, you know, showed up late, left early. Nothing like what I'm doing now, but they showed up late, left early, drove the nicest car, had a nice suit. I was like, I want that. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what it was, but I just wanted to have a piece of that.
Yeah.
And so getting into, you know, first firm that I go off into was Edward Jones. And I worked there for a little while. And then from Edward Jones, I went to another insurance company and worked there for, you know, between those two places, a little over 5 years. The reason why Gen Next Wealth came about is because when I was sitting there meeting with clients, we were, you know, in the industry, the only way you make money is to deal with people that have money.
Right, right.
So I get into the industry so I can help people that look like me and other minorities. And the only way I could be successful in this company was to not help those people because they didn't have the money and the assets to really make money for the company. And so what happened from there was I started asking my clients, I started noticing that a lot of clients were coming to me from white advisors. They were leaving their white advisors and coming to invest with me or buy insurance for me and doing all these things. And I didn't really think anything of it until, you know, I have, you know, over 100 clients and I'm looking at them and look at all the clients. I was like, wow, this is a minority book. Like everybody in the book, you know, looks like me or my wife.
That's incredible.
And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe I have something here. And so then.
And your wife is?
My wife's Mexican.
Mexican. Okay.
Yeah. So when that all happened, I was like, you know what? I think I can do this better because I was still getting the questions. I'd sell someone an insurance policy, you know, I'd get them some mutual funds and they'd still have questions about their company benefits. They still have questions about how to invest money in their 401k. Wow. They still have questions about, you know, what do I do with this trust or having beneficiaries, their children as beneficiaries, and just a lot of different financial questions that they weren't being answered from the services that I was offering because only way I was being paid was to sell the product.
So,
you know, fast forward a couple of years and I start my own firm and it was largely based on being able to help minority families.
So let's talk about that, right? And you talk about starting your own firm, mm-hmm. right? And starting your own firm as a Black man,
yeah.
right? Like what were some of the challenges there that you faced?
So one of the problems that, you know, issue is, so, okay, so when I'm looking around for someone to look to talk to that looks like me in the industry, there's not many of us.
Right.
So there's not a lot of people that I can go find in the industry that were Black that I could ask about how they started their own firm. And yep. so now I find myself out on an island with no one to really kind of give me guidance. Mm-hmm. And so not that, and I don't want people to think like, I'm like, well, you can just ask other advisors just because they're not Black. It's just different. Yeah, you know what yeah, I mean? Sometimes you can't put into words how mm-hmm. different it is, mm-hmm. but it is different. Like the way that it was, like people were like, oh, you're starting your own firm. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, what does that mean? I got questions like, so I'm going to invest my money with you. You know, I got $10,000. I'm going to give it to you. Where does the money go? Like, they don't even understand that.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm going to be with TD Ameritrade. Oh, okay. TD Ameritrade. So I have to go through this validation process, even mm-hmm. though I've been in the financial services industry for 18 years.
Right.
I still have to go revalidate myself because now I'm no longer supported by this big company name.
Right.
And that's the same thing that I think other advisors go through. However, when you look out and you see the landscape of other advisors, there's a lot more of them. Mm-hmm. And so now you have this single Black guy out here starting his own firm without the big company backing. Right. It's like, how does this work?
Right.
And so trying to explain through that was one of the challenges. However, I was very fortunate because I had the group of clients that look like me, that trusted me, yeah. that said, you know, okay, well, wherever you go, we're going.
Right.
And so that helped out a lot. So that was one of the things that was kind of like a silver lining in the transition, mm-hmm. because had I not had those group of people that actually believed in me, I probably wouldn't have made it, man.
Right. Because of your, you know, and one of the things, again, I've heard this, I'm sure you've heard it. Mm-hmm. You're serving that demo. It's mm-hmm. where you got to change it up, mm-hmm. right? Are you forced to make any changes in terms of, again, who you custody with or your business model, right? How you actually charge them?
Yes. So there's two ways that people work with me. Either you're going to have AUM mm-hmm. or three, actually. So you'll have AUM where, mm-hmm. you know how that works, or we'll have financial planning mm-hmm. where we actually put together a plan and they can play that on a subscription. Now mm-hmm. it's an annual plan charged annually, mm-hmm.
billed monthly.
To make it affordable for people. The other way is to have a combination of both,
right.
where you will have a financial plan, mm-hmm. you will be charged for your investments, mm-hmm. and then that would be a complete comprehensive plan.
Right.
So those are the three ways that people work with me.
Yeah.
And I think that that was one of the toughest barriers that I had.
Okay.
Because we're talking to people that don't typically have financial plans, or we've been sold a financial plan from someone that's selling us a financial product.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so at the end, when I'm talking to people, that was now that I'm backing out of it, thinking about not back, but looking at what I just said, the toughest part is trying to explain to people why they're going to pay me monthly mm-hmm. to put together a plan for them. Mm-hmm. that costs this much and why there's no product at the end of it.
Right.
Because we have done a horrible job in the financial services industry of selling products mm-hmm. and not giving solutions. So everybody was like, well, you don't sell life insurance. Mm-hmm. You don't sell annuities. I was like, no, I don't sell that.
No.
I'm going to make sure that you are on track financially. Well, what does that even mean?
Now let's back up, right? Let's not take some things for granted because we do have the privilege of knowing what we know, but mm-hmm. go back to AUM for a second and just explain that.
Yeah. So AUM is going to be assets under management. The best way to explain that to people, especially people that, you know, may have never worked with a financial advisor. Let's just say you were, let's say you retired, right? Or you left the job. That's a little more realistic or sooner. So you had a 401k at a job and you've been putting money away. And now you have a balance, $20,000, $40,000, and you leave. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what do I do with that balance? Well, someone like myself would charge you a percentage fee on the assets that we manage. Typically, it's about 1%. And so that 1% fee will come out of the assets that you've transferred over to take care of for us. And we will help you with picking the investments.
Right.
What I was finding is that's a big deal or a tough spot for people to be in because they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
Like they're like, I don't know why my account's going up and down. I don't understand this. And so what happens is when you have those assets, whether it's from a retirement plan or it's, you know, non-qualified, meaning it's not with a retirement plan, you can have someone like myself manage those assets, and we charge you a percentage fee of the overall assets that we manage.
Let me ask you this. What do you feel like the industry could do better in terms of helping you, right? And what I mean by that is, again, we can go so many ways what it means to be, you know, a Black man in this business. But just in terms, again, we talk about diversity and inclusion and all of that. But you're working with a particular group of people. Mm-hmm. We'll get into this as well, where the relationship to you is really important. I know there's something to remember when we first met that you said, or get to that. But where do you feel like the industry is lacking in providing you either the resources or the attention that you need in order for you to have a $1 billion RIA like, you know, some of our colleagues may have?
I think the industry as a whole has to help educate minorities. And it's going to have to come from other minorities.
Yes.
So we have to have, I know we're trying to do diversity, we're trying to do inclusion, but it has to get more than, it has to be more than just a catchphrase or something to say.
Thank you.
Because it means, like, it's one thing to say diversity and then I'm not going to say what I really want to say just because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But when we say diversity, it's become a buzzword and something fun to say. But until we have more Tyrones and more Emlyns and more, you know, Keishas and more, you know, Marias and more other people of color in this industry to take this message back into their own communities, we can't make a change. Like we can't, because they're not going to trust the Todds. It's just like if he shows up like, and I say that name specifically because one of my close friends is named Todd, and we talked about this before. How can he reach people like, you know, he's a white guy,
right,
and he says, how can I reach, you know, young Black men like you? I said, Todd, you can't.
Right.
I said, you can come in and talk to us, but until we have more people that look like us in the industry, it's not going to change. One of the things I got a problem with is the conference prices. Let's just talk about it. Like, since you brought it up, let's talk about it. Like, you said, we were looking at a conference the other day, and like, you know, I love NAPFA, I love FPA, but when the conference costs $2,500 and I'm just starting my firm,
right,
that means I'm not going.
Yep.
And that means that some of the messages and some of the things that they have there that I need to hear, I'm not going to be able to hear. In turn, I'm not going to be able to grow my firm. In turn, I'm not going to be able to hire someone that looks like me. In turn, that's going to trickle down. Mm-hmm. So if you have something as small, it may seem something as insignificant as a conference fee, but a conference fee being at $2,500 makes it hard for me to get there. And it makes it harder for me to have someone, like if I do have a staff member, if I got to take them with me, that's $5,000 for me to take them.
Yeah.
That's not including the hotel.
Travel. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So like, those are the kind of things that I think, like, I don't want them to like think of it like as a welfare or like a handout or anything. But if you just lower the price in general,
right,
it would make it easier for people of color or advisors of color, especially new ones starting firms, to be able to attend those conferences to get the nuggets that they need, because we still need other advisors that have been seasoned in this to learn from.
100%.
But if we can't get, as you, the word you like to use is proximate. If I can't go sit in the audience and listen to them and maybe be able to shake a hand and get a number and be able to meet with them later.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And I'll go there on the diversity and inclusion thing, right? I've said it on my walk and talks. I'm tired of that term, because what it started out as was for us in the 60s.
Yeah.
Implemented in the 80s in companies, right? So people were comfortable working alongside Black and brown folk. Mm-hmm. Now it's turned into, you know, a one-legged giraffe, mm-hmm. somebody that's under 5 foot, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's, oh, well, we hired a woman, we're diverse, mm-hmm. right away. So that has to change. And I agree with that. And again, whether we call it representation and equity mm-hmm. or equality or whatever you want to do, but it's definitely become a trope, mm-hmm. and it's not, it doesn't hold any weight anymore, because you can just see that. So I agree with you. And one of the things that I said was, I'm going to start doing is, I'll speak at your conference. Mm-hmm. But here's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're going to reach out to Emlyn. You're going to reach out to DeSarte. You're going to reach out to Samuel. You're going to reach out to all these people. You're going to get them on board. And here's what I also said, right, is why not have a panel of all Black male advisors? Have you ever seen one at any conference?
No.
And then on top of that, I said, you're going to bust Black boys in to hear me speak, mm-hmm. or at least attempt it, mm-hmm. because everyone else does it, right? Women are doing it. I want a woman panelist, and you know, the LGBTQ community. Why can't we do it? because if we're going to have to fight for the changes that we want to see, which leads me, again, this is a perfect part into this conversation is, again, access, exposure, proximity, all the things that I talk about, advocacy. Altruist is a company that's looking to disrupt the industry, make it cheaper for advisors to have to run their practice and work with people of all sorts. So do you see technology as being a hurdle as well in terms of price or, you know, of being able to serve your clients? Because one of the things that I realize is I'm really big on tech, but I always have to humble myself and realize that as that starts to develop, it can get away from the people who really need it. Mm-hmm. It is making the industry more inclusive, mm-hmm. but their access to it is limited mm-hmm. if the people who are giving them the advice mm-hmm. can't pay for it or don't have yes. those tools. You know yes. what I'm saying?
I think in that aspect, because of being part of XY Planning Network, mm-hmm. actually is packaged up some of those technologies that I have. Mm-hmm. and made them a lot less expensive. Yeah. So that has helped me out just by having the membership there. Because I was there, I was able to work with someone on my systems. Mm-hmm. So my stuff is completely automated.
Right.
Like everything is automated. So technology for me has actually been a really, really great spot for me.
Right.
In being able to reach my clients and make it more accessible for yes. them and make it easier for them. Okay. However, now when I have some people, because everything is scheduling on app, right?
Okay.
For my appointments.
Right.
There's no call. What time is this? What time are we going to meet? They do it all on the app. And I've been able to do it very inexpensive.
Right.
Because of some of the people that I was able to meet to help me do stuff. So, I mean, all in tech stack, real right. talk. Like if I give you like real talk on my tech stack, like I'm paying less than $200 for my tech stack.
Wow.
Because I have a TAMP right. that helps me with some of the stuff. And then I have my own text that I have, like my own little tech stuff that I've, so I've been able to do it on the cheap.
Yeah. Now, and again, you tend to give and voice your frustrations from where you sit, right?
Yeah.
So me playing in the crypto space,
yeah.
I'm completely aggravated
yeah.
that tech is not going to the people who need it. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
from my perspective, right? And I get that. And that's right. And that, and again, that's why I love, again, this race to zero now in mm-hmm. fees.
Dope.
And I love the fact that, you know, people can, again, I said our business has changed forever since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where people could just do everything from their phone. But I think as we get to AI and we get more into mm-hmm. crypto and all these other things, there is a group there that's, you can see already the chasm is growing mm-hmm. between the accessibility to this technology and the resources that they have to actually get exposed to it. And I'm like, no, we got to catch this now, right? So they still need exposure to that.
I think about my in-laws. So my mother-in-law doesn't speak English. My father-in-law, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think about, when I think about technology, would I be able to send them the link? Would I be able to, would yeah. they be able to understand? I don't know.
Right.
You know, there's, I heard you talk about unbanked, and that yeah. really rings a bell with me because well, my wife's a bank manager and I used to be a bank manager.
Yeah, yeah,
so there's
yeah.
the group of people that are unbanked
mm-hmm.
are only going to get further away.
Yes.
As technology.
Yes.
So I get what you're yep. saying with that because yep. they're not going to, they just don't trust technology.
Yep.
And then people aren't communicating that. Like, it's funny to see it because I see, like, and this is just straight from banking. I see my wife's frustration with people that she's like, people still come into the bank and ask for their balance. She's like, we got apps. They got online. Right. They can access it from the ATM,
mm-hmm.
but they're not comfortable with it. And so how do we help those people? And that's a tough question.
Right. And the thing is, when you say those people, you're talking about my parents,
yeah.
right? Like I had to open up a TD statement
yeah.
and walk my parents through it. Like mm-hmm. the debits, the credits, mm-hmm. right? They don't trust, right? Mm-hmm. No apps or anything, mm-hmm. like it's all paper. Mm-hmm. So that part, so I'm always cognizant of that, right? I love technology. I love what it's doing. And listen, we have tremendous privilege and I know mm-hmm. I don't live a life anywhere near what my parents do, but yeah. I mean, I hate going to the ATM. I ain't doing yeah. any of that. But so yeah, we definitely have to be aware of that, especially as we're trying to be a voice for the communities that we serve, is that they can be left behind. Mm-hmm. The whole cashless thing, right? That's a whole nother thing, right? There's just people who continue to use, my father loves cash. That's all he's ever known, mm-hmm. right? Like if he can't hold it in his hand, it's not real to him.
Yep.
You know, he'll never swipe a card. He'll never do any of that. Like he needs cash in his hand. So it's really interesting when you really start to get into the weeds of who we serve and why we serve. And like you said, what I love the fact that you mentioned, it makes it easier. And also, let me ask you this. Does it make you, the cost is great, right? Because it's inexpensive, but does it allow you to take on more people, right? Which is-
It allows me to take on more people and it adds the legitimacy to the business. Oh, I don't have, here, use this app.
Right.
Oh, wow, I can just, and I ask them when they come in, how easy was it? Oh, it was easy. And it sent me a reminder before. So now they're like, oh, wow, he really has a business.
Right.
This isn't just Imlin, just like I'm not helping Imlin out.
Right.
He's helping me.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's that, it's some of the questionnaires that they have after they set up the appointment. It automatically has a pre-meeting questionnaire that it goes to. They're like, oh, wow, I went straight to the question. So they come in and they embrace the technology. Now, there's a difference between that person and the person that's not going to know how to use a computer. Yeah. I have people like that, too.
Right.
But they trust me because they know me.
Yeah.
Right. And they can say, OK, well, at least he looks like me, or, you know, his wife looks like me. So I can kind of trust him a little bit. And so I can get past some of that just because they trust me. But if, like, once again, if we don't have more of us, and when I say us, I mean black and brown people in the workspace, the level of trust continues to drop.
And so let's go there for a minute. Right. Because you said you referenced. Right. You said they trust me. So who is me? And again, I always go back to when, you know, we first met, which wasn't too long ago, which is fascinating about all of this, is that, you know, when we were doing the whole round table with Justin and, you know, that we recorded, you were saying that, you know, how your clients literally, they invite you over and you get invites to stuff or whatever. And you could tell you were really big on the relationships you have with your clients. Where does that come from about you and your constitution that makes you up that's so important to you?
Comes from my grandmother. You know, my grandmother passed away a few years back, but my grandmother was big on relationships. I knew all of my cousins and everything like that because every weekend we're in the car going to see family, hanging out. Not only family, but she had her friends. We'd go to their house and we'd always sit down, we'd talk, we'd break bread. And there was like, I don't think that's what we eat together. I don't think you're really friends with someone until you go eat in their house and sit down at their table and eat with them. You can't call that a friend unless you don't do that.
Yeah, you gotta break bread.
And so when I started my firm, and even before, the thing that I would say to my clients is, and I said this, you've heard me say it before, but I said, if you're going to Thanksgiving dinner and everyone at the table doesn't know who I am, then I didn't do a good job.
Wow.
Because when you're sitting at Thanksgiving dinner, that's when you're talking about, you know, everybody, the family's together, everybody's talking about everything. And, and so this is where I want to position myself in my client's life as a part of their family, is something they discuss at the table.
Right.
And so that's where the genesis of that came from, my grandmother, like going around, making sure people, you know, my grandma's taking people food, cooking cakes, you know, taking pies over here, doing all that stuff. And so it just really was important for me to be able to build those relationships before I can talk to you about your money, before I can talk to you about saving this retirement, putting the kids to school. I got to know something about you.
Yeah.
And I think we as an industry have done a good job about getting the numbers right and getting the people wrong.
Ooh.
And so
if we don't
get the people right, the numbers don't matter.
Right. And I love that too, because I'm very big on family too. And I was just on my walk and talk last night, I was talking about, we need to get back to breaking bread. That means something. And my mother raised us like that. Somebody puts food in your mouth, you're supposed to honor that person. Just honor them as a person. Not, you know, you got to go out of your way, but you always respect the fact that that person did that because they don't have to. And breaking bread is always sacred. I mean, we were raised that you don't throw bread out, you wet it. Like, that's how sacred it was in our house. You would wet the bread before you threw it out. And if my mother was there, she'd probably, oh, my father, he'd make you cut out the mold part off, like, and you're going to toast that.
Yeah. It became a place, like, in my friends that grew up with me. Like, my house was the place where you, like, everyone knew when my grandma was cooking.
Yep.
Like, you come over, grandma's cooking. She, hey, they're like, Sunday is Sunday. You got Sunday dinner.
Yeah.
It's going to be like that. And I think that's the times when the advisors would come. I remember the insurance man coming to the house. He'd sit down at the table with us. Yep. Like, if we're eating dinner, insurance man come down, sit at the table and eat with us.
Right.
It's just, I mean, I think we missed
it. So it comes from, you know, your grandmother, and obviously you're very big on family. Now, anyone that follows you on social media, you can see, like, you the importance of family to you. And a lot of advisors have been doing that. But talk about that, right? You put the shirt on and what you're saying about the shirt. But talk a little bit about your family and the role your family plays in how you service your clients, right? And how you look at, again, tying all that together, your grandmother to your personal experiences, to your practice.
When it comes to family, like, it's crazy. So I'm just gonna jump in. Like, family is, like, my grandmother's always been held the family together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I have my grandfather, my grandmother, my mom, and she held everything together. I remember growing up, and I'm just gonna keep it 100 with you. Like, growing up and going to visit my uncles and my mom in prison, like with my grandma. That was part of the stops.
Right.
Like we go over here, eat dinner, do that, do this. Then we go see my mom when she was, you know, when she wasn't doing well. Go see my uncle, come back. And it just always, it just really kind of made family important. It didn't matter what you did.
Yep.
And it's kind of crazy, right? Like it didn't matter what you did. Like this was family. We got to take care of them. And so now, you know, being married, this is my second marriage. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
So it's my second marriage and being married and seeing how my wife is with her family. They're so tight. Mm-hmm. Like they got group texts. They talk all the time. And so having that plus what I've had with my own grandmother and then trying to like make this family. Like I'm wearing this shirt today. My uncle bought me this shirt and it's the original because my son is the encore.
Right.
You know, he's Emlyn Miles Mattingly II. And so like just having all of that stuff, like my clients call me because I post something on social media about my son. Like they don't even talk business. Like they didn't ask.
Right.
Because the numbers aren't that important.
Yep.
They call to ask about, hey, how's the baby? How's he doing? What's going on with him? You know, how's, you know, this and that. And I think that my client appreciation dinner last year.
Yep.
Right. So we had the appreciation dinner and one of my business partners, he came in and he was like, man, Emlyn, everybody in this room knows each other. I was like, yeah, I said, because most of them are related.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said, you better not ever make anybody mad. I was like, you damn right. I can't make anybody mad because I, you know, but that's the atmosphere that we have. Like everyone knows each other. When we talk about Gen Next Wealth, is helping minority families build generational wealth. So I need to know mom and dad. I need to know the kids that are my age. I need to know the grandkids. The money is all lined up there. I'm not even spending much time talking about the money because I'm talking about, you know, what grandbaby was born and how old, you know, what kid is going to this school and kids are getting ready to go to college and all this stuff that's going on. And that's what's important.
This is what I love about, honestly, and I'm super biased because this is no doubt the best podcast on the universe. But this is what I love about this podcast is that, right, you can see someone's practice, right? We make it very visual, who we serve, right? And the, you know, it's crypto, it's retirement planning, it's whatever. But what I love in all of these conversations is if you follow it back, mm-hmm. right? Mine goes back to my parents, right? You mentioned your grandmother, right? Other folks have mentioned their father or whatever. Your practice is always a menagerie, so to speak, of the people in your life, right? And you created family out of your clients because family's big to you, mm-hmm. right? From your personal, you know, your immediate family to your extended family. And I think we bring a lot of that. We bring more to our practice than what we think. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, again, I can never mention by name, but my mentor was like, what you're going to realize when you start to become a successful advisor, mm-hmm. and I want to stop using the term book, but he was like, your book is going to look a lot like you. Mm-hmm. And he said, and not in the ways that you think, mm-hmm. right? Is that a lot of the things that are important to you will be important to them. A lot of the things that they dislike, you'll dislike, right? It'll really start to blend. And it's amazing to see, you know, to see that and how you talk about it. And when you said that, again, so many people said so many powerful things in that room. Shout to Courtney as well. But when you said that, I'm like, man, that's so true. Because it's like that with me too. I feel like my clients, it's nasty to use that word with them. Like we're friends. Like mm-hmm. they literally call when they see someone on social media may not be right. You okay? You good? Is there anything that we can do? Mm-hmm. You know, they've been so supportive of this, right? So it's like you think about how those relationships start and they grow with you, the kids get older, all of that stuff. And then now you're at the point where you're like, man, it's almost like they're family and they know each other, right? Your friends become some of their friends, some of your colleagues or whatever. So it's amazing how, again, humanizing this business at the end of the day, like you said, the numbers could be right. That's fantastic, right? But you're just missing the people. Everything is doing this. So that's incredible. And again, before we get too far away from this, I definitely want to stay in this vein because one of the things that is so important when I meet people and talking to them and me being in the transition of my life now where I'm healing, I'm finding a second life. Like it's weird. Like every day for me is kind of an out of body experience because I'm not supposed to be here for a lot of reasons. I saw it being differently. And again, just in, you know, a moment of weakness, you know, I almost gave it all up, but I definitely want to hit on 2012. Right. And we had a really deep conversation. We didn't know each other probably literally 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. And we were talking about that, but just talk a little bit about how that makes you, right. And what that, because I believe adversity reveals.
Yeah. So 2012, hell of a year. So things happen at the bank. I end up leaving from the bank. And this is right after, you know, get a divorce, leave the job, don't really know what's going on. My grandfather had passed away a few years before. My uncle had passed away a few years before. And I remember, I think I told you this when we were sitting there. So I remember sitting there on my bed, tears running down my face, not knowing what I was going to do. I just started at one company. I was working at Edward Jones, getting ready to go work somewhere else at Principal, and just in the valley of despair, if you will. Just sitting there, and I said, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I remembered, it was a Bible verse. I can't remember the exact verse, but I remember it said, David encouraged himself in the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I said, literally heard a voice, everything's going to be all right. And I remember that, saying that over and over with, everything's going to be all right. Started at Principal after that. 2013 hit. Set the record for having the most applications taken there. So 2012 ended. It was just bad. I was like, get this year over with.
All right.
2013 came. I started working at Principal. I set the record for having the most applications ever taken. I started to build my practice. I hired my first employee that second year when I came in, and things just started to move forward from there. But there was some real adversity that I faced in, without getting into details,
there
was some adversity that I had in 2012 that I felt was like rock bottom. Almost lost my house. Had the failed marriage, career. Ultimate, just I wanted to get into financial planning, just not our financial advising, just not the way that I was kind of pushed into it.
Right.
But I really believe everything worked out, man, because I don't think that you can ever experience high highs if you haven't had low lows.
Again, it's incredible to think, right? And you know, I'm not even going to start on that, but it's, I look back now, it's like 2012 was so bad, mm-hmm. which is by far was the year of my life, but 2007 was awful. Mm-hmm. But it was like 2012 was just so bad. Like it was a breaking point for me, where it's like that moment, as you said, you're sitting like everything was going to be all right. And it's like this moment, literally the podcast, you being here, like this was birthed out of what I went through there. Like literally at that moment, because all of that was on the way and I kind of got snatched back for this moment, right? You're talking about a Bible verse, right? For such a time as this, right? Is a really powerful thing, man. But I definitely wanted to touch on that. And before we go from there, two Bible verses, but let's talk about that, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, being a pastor that part of, I don't know how much of that you bring to your practice, but let's talk about that.
Oh, you'd be surprised, man. Yeah. You'd be surprised. So back in like 2000, I want to say it was 2000. I was working at, so about 2007. I was assistant pastor at a small church in Chowchilla, which is a city about 15. It's in the county of Madera. Okay. So I was there and, I went to Bible college for 4 years. I mean, I was, you know, live, breathe, eat, sleep, preach on Sunday, Wednesday, do the new converts class, all that stuff. That, like, I think that your life, not just life in general, like everything that happens prepares you for what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Me being able to have conversations with people at church about their lives, preaching messages, getting sermons, getting all that stuff, prepare me to be able to do public speaking, prepare me to be able to deal with tough family situations when I'm talking to someone in a position like that. And then being able to give them some guidance. Like I was doing that, but I was like 25 years old. So here I am going to the hospital to go pray for someone, not knowing what's going to happen, but just believing by faith. I remember one time I asked my pastor, like he was my mentor used to tell me, he said, you have that barbarian faith. This is what he used to tell me. He said, the Bible says that it's going to do it and you just believe it. Right. So one time my pastor's back was hurt and I was like, well, you want me to pray for you? You believe God can heal it? He was like, bro, I'm the pastor. What are you asking? I was like, I just asked you the question. You believe what the Bible says. So I just think that those types of like life experiences, to be able to draw from those and being able to see how I use it now in my practice and dealing with people. I'm not very judgmental.
Are you shy with bringing religion into your practice or mention it? Okay.
No. I mean, I'm not, I don't call it religion. I call it relationship, right?
Okay.
Because I think that it's different. Like there's certain things that you don't do because of how close your relationship is with your mom or with your dad. Mm-hmm. And so you liken it to relationship. Religion causes a lot of problems.
It does.
I'm very, very cognizant about how I bring it up. And then sometimes people don't even realize I'm using biblical principles when I talk to them.
Right.
They just don't, you know, they don't know. They just understand that this is the principle. So it's one of those things that I'm glad that I was able to do that. And once again, that was my grandmother. Because she would make me go to church,
right?
Whether I wanted to go or not. So it was just.
Well, I know what my mother's favorite podcast episode is going to be. Yeah. This one. By the time you work some church into one of them episodes. Yeah, right. Yeah, man. So here we go. I ask everybody this question, and again, part of the genesis of the question when we were developing the podcast or whatever. It's easy to ask somebody, "What are you grateful for?" Right? Mm-hmm. But as someone who's in the healing process of getting to the point of, and I've had some incredible answers, and I want to be able to answer this question at some point with some confidence and some pride to demonstrate healing to myself. But I want to ask you, what are you most grateful for that never worked out for you?
It's going to be interesting because it's one of the things that I always think about. But I am grateful that I never was able to really play college football. And it's like, I think about that. Like, I had an opportunity to try out at San Jose State. I played a little bit at a junior college, and it seemed like everything was against me to try to play football. Like, to this day, I still love football. But I think that had I made it in football, I would not be helping as many people as I'm being able to help now. And I wouldn't be able to, I probably wouldn't have met my wife. No telling where all that would have went, but I think that was the best thing that ever happened. I love the game, love the sport. Hopefully my son wants to play. If he wants to, if he does, play. But I think that was probably it, not being able to play collegiate football.
And again, that's powerful. We'll leave it there. But again, as I did say, to DeSarte when he answers kind of saying that, right, with us all being athletes and that whole thing, is that I'm not there, right, to be able to say that. And a little bit of my story, but I wish at some point, right, for myself, and I pray for myself that I'm just able to be like, man, I'm so glad the Olympics never worked out. Now, again, some of the things that are happening, realize that there's some things that I'm doing now I would have never done then. But that's a very powerful answer, man. And thank you from me, and I'm sure thank you from everybody else for your time. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode. This has been real and deep. Appreciate you. See you on the next one.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes.